WBEZ is supported by RRF Foundation for Aging. Let's talk about ageism awareness. Did you know one of the many forms of ageism is internalized ageism? In fact, negative self-perceptions of aging decreases quality of life and can shorten our lifespan by more than 7 years. Let's recognize and call out ageism whenever and wherever it shows up. Check out rrf.org/news to learn more. That's rrf.org/news.
Sources and methods, the crown jewels of the intelligence community. Shorthand for how do we know what's real? Who told us? If you have those answers, you're on the inside, and NPR wants to bring you there. From the Pentagon to the State Department to spy agencies, listen to understand what's really happening and what it means for you. Sources and Methods, the new national security podcast from NPR.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Stick around for a breakdown of the latest local news in and around Chicago later in this podcast. But first, we've been talking a lot on In the Loop about the impact of National Guard troops expected to come to Chicago, ICE raids. And on top of all of that, it's now been a whole week since the federal government's been shut down. This has left thousands of federal workers without pay, including TSA officers. I caught up with Darrell English. He's president of TSA Local 777, representing officers stationed at Chicago's airports. And he says they're already in talks about how to support their members.
As far as our local is concerned, we're meeting to strategize how we're going to be able to assist officers as far as carpooling efforts, reaching out to other officers, seeing where they're located at. So we have a couple of different things that we got set up, but a lot of it deals with volunteer work that we have to do.
Sticking with transportation and funding issues, the CTA's Red Line extension just hit another roadblock. Yep, you guessed it, a roadblock named President Donald Trump. He's putting more than $2 billion in infrastructure funds on hold, money that was supposed to get the massive CTA extension to the far south side and construction on the Purple Line off the ground. So what does this political fight mean for commuters, neighborhoods, and Chicago's environmental goals? We'll dig into it. Let's get to the conversation. At the table, Andrea Reed, Executive Director of the Greater Roseland Chamber of Commerce, Karen Weigert, who's In the Loop's sustainability contributor, and Justin Marlowe, who's a research professor in the University of Chicago's Harris School of Public Policy. Andrea, you've been advocating for the Red Line extension for years. I got to hear your initial reaction to this news.
Stunning. I've been working on the Red Line extension project since 2009. And it just feels like I'm in a dream and somebody needs to wake me up, because we celebrated when we finally heard that the funding was in place, and because it was, it's always been, some issue with getting all the funding in place.
Yeah.
So when we finally heard about, everything was a go, we were very happy about it. And we just went through a charrette looking at the various stations and the design and picking out different things that we as a community wanted to see at those various stations. So,
yeah. Well, when I talked to you last, it was 2023 when this had just happened, right? To your point that we just found out that the federal funding had been approved, and you, after saying it's about time, you said, we've seen things start and come to an abrupt end because there was no funding. So I wonder if over the last couple of years, was part of you kind of bracing for this to potentially happen?
Well, yes, but no. Being a believer, keeping hope alive.
You were still optimistic.
Yeah, that this was going to happen. And it is certainly necessary. When I learned years ago from the cost of segregation studies that transportation was deliberately cut off at 95th Street, it broke my heart, because there are people, there are human beings that live beyond 95th Street that need access to jobs, to goods and services, and things that contribute to the quality of life. And then we wonder why we have to deal with or are living with the social ills that exist in our community.
Justin and Karen, I want to bring you in here. Justin, you first, your reaction to Trump doing this, putting this pause on $2 billion worth of infrastructure funds.
Yeah, it's certainly part of a broader trend that we've seen the Trump administration really assert itself in the budget process in ways that we haven't seen presidents assert themselves in the budget process in a long time, if ever. I think that this it's part of a broader trend. Money was pulled back from New York City. Certainly money's been pulled back from lots of other things that the federal government funds. So this is not uniquely a Chicago thing. It's clearly part of a larger shift.
Yeah.
I think that the bigger question really now is just going to be how the courts perceive that kind of power grab on the part of the Trump administration. There's, I think, going to be good arguments against it. I think that's probably where the CTA and others are going to go and try to make the argument that there was a contract. The federal government had made this commitment. You can't simply decide to change the rules after a contract has been signed. I'm sure the Trump administration has its arguments in the other direction. But it's not surprising in the sense that it's part of a much larger trend. It's uniquely painful in the context of the CTA and the Red Line project itself. You're talking about billions of dollars, a very large share, perhaps a majority of the overall funding for the Red Line coming from federal money. So it's hard to kind of see what happens if the federal money goes away completely or is pulled back kind of indefinitely, which would make the project take longer, cost more, and just create a lot of uncertainty.
Yeah. Karen, help us understand a bit more of those pain points that Justin was pointing out there.
Yeah, it's a uniquely important potential piece of infrastructure. Just to put a couple stats on it, if you look at the population of Chicago and who lives where, 24% of the folks who live in the area of the Red Line extension are at or below the poverty level. For the city of Chicago, that average is 18%. So we are really talking about infrastructure to provide more equity and opportunity throughout the city that is now at play.
Yeah. When you first moved to Chicago years ago, I'm hearing, Karen, you were trying to, because you didn't know any better and you made the assumption that I think everybody would, you were trying to get to Altgeld Gardens on the far south side. And you first realized at that point, the Red Line stops many miles short of the edge of the city.
Yeah, I had a pretty mortifying and horrifying moment. I moved to Chicago. I had my job. It's sort of like a couple month internship. And I had to figure out where to live. So, of course, I chose to live somewhere near a train stop. And there were a couple of locations that I would be supporting in this job. And so I knew one was on the far south side and one was more centrally located. And so I was ready. And then my manager said, how are you going to get to Altgeld Gardens? I said, well, I'm going to take the Red Line. And I'll just never forget that moment. Mm-hmm. There was this pause. And she said, you're not going to take the Red Line. And I was like, well, sure, I know how to get there. She's like, it doesn't
like
come
you
here.
Literally
it's
cannot
miles from 95th to Altgeld Gardens. They had to send a jitney to get me, and that's when I learned the word jitney.
Andrea, this is what's at stake, is it not? I mean, how are Roseland residents doing this? How are they getting around without having that direct connection to a train?
That is again a major peril for our community, and it's a setback. I've gotten very involved with economic development in our community from entrepreneurship. We offer counseling, coaching, and mentoring programs for our entrepreneurs and those seeking to start their own businesses because there is a lack of, due to the lack of transportation and being able to have access to opportunities. We're doing our best to make it available in the community. It breaks my heart that people don't have the access that they need to not just work, but education. They want to go outside of the community to seek higher education.
Yeah.
It's a challenge.
So, Justin, we're looking at the press release from the U.S. Department of Transportation. It says the reviews that they're conducting about the Red Line extension project are intended to, quote, ensure no additional federal dollars go towards discriminatory, illegal, and wasteful contracting practices. What are they referring to? What do you think?
That's a good question. I think that's what's going to need to be sorted out.
I mean, do we know anything about the contracting practices that says that they're wasteful?
No, I mean, what the CTA has done is contracted this project out and by some estimates, something like 80% of the construction work for this project has already been contracted out. What the CTA has done is followed procedures that have been in place for a long, long time. What has happened here is the federal government is now reinterpreting what those contracting procedures can and should be, especially around some of the preferences that have been in place for a long time for minority women business enterprises and others. So that's really what this is about, is it's a reinterpretation, as I mentioned before, a shift on the part of the way the federal government is deciding to think about this. I think that's, again, this will go to court. It's fair to say, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not going to pretend to be one, but I think it's fair to say that the legal arguments on behalf of what the CTA has done so far are certainly what they're going to hang their hat on. It does raise the sort of bigger question of if this question of the federal government being willing and able to kind of change the rules once grants have been written, if that's going to become part of the new norm, then it does raise the, you know, the bigger question of, can we rely on this money?
Yes.
Are these dollars that we should be planning for in the future? And I think in many ways that is, for me at least, from a budgeting standpoint, the main takeaway
right.
of this entire incident is, what does this mean for how we fund these sorts of projects in the future?
Yeah, there's also something else to what you just revealed there, Justin. I mean, 80% of this work has already been contracted out, right? There's a company that's already been chosen here to design and to build this extension. I imagine they're, of course, counting this as part of their portfolio. So what's the domino effect here of delaying a project of this scale?
Yeah, it's meaningful for sure. I mean, I think I would say at the outset, I don't want to make a prediction. I think that the money will come back. I think we should emphasize the pause in federal funding. I think these dollars will come back, and I think this project will
get done. So it's just a tactic for now, you're thinking?
Yeah, I think it'll get done, but it'll get done at more cost. It'll get done and it'll take longer. And all of the sorts of negative effects that we've heard about lack of access to transit will continue for much longer than they probably should.
Yeah.
And so, there's definitely domino effects to that. But I don't necessarily think of this as a permanent a permanent shift in how this project means. It's a delay. It's an additional cost. But we should probably think of it as a temporary situation.
You raised your eyebrows, Andrea. Are you as optimistic? Are you thinking this will come back?
I'm praying that it does, because one of the things that we looked at with this whole project was, in a community like Roseland that has suffered from gross disinvestment for decades, we have this infrastructure called the Red Line coming into our community, which means jobs, job opportunities, and we've been pushing our community to take advantage of the skill training programs, not looking at this as just a job opportunity, but these are careers. And if someone can get the training, become a card-carrying member of a union, that's lifetime.
Yeah.
And you can work anywhere. So we know the Red Line, the jobs are, you know, at the point that the thing is built and it's final, and we do the ribbon cutting and all of that, we're looking at lives being impacted, where people can afford to buy a home and they can afford to put food on the table. They can, you know, and they can live in their community.
Right, which
and,
is key.
And so the money gets reinvested back into the community. And that's a much brighter picture. And it's worth the investment.
Yeah, Karen, you know, we are talking so much about the importance of having a train close by, lessening commute time, as Andrea just pointed out. Investing in public transit has benefits for the whole city, right? And public transit plays a huge role in creating a sustainable community, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Just to think about this question of jobs and economic opportunity, there's just a really simple way to think about it in Chicago, which is, what do we call our downtown? We call it the Loop. It's because the trains loop around downtown. It is transit rich. So absolutely, it's been the backbone of economic development and opportunity. It's also, absolutely to your point, Sasha, it's a backbone to sustainable living. You hop on the trains. The CTA trains are all electric. That usually creates walkable opportunities, because this transit lessens the burdens for employees to find jobs and come into different places that might have opportunities. It also expands the opportunities for employers. We've got a bigger pool from which to choose. You can hire people throughout this city. And then you think about then how people move around. Those train stops don't move, which means businesses can be located there. So you have these clusters of opportunity. So both from what the physical infrastructure brings, as well as the access that it brings,
right.
All of that is, you know, low carbon, lower pollution, but it's really economic development for all of Chicago.
Yeah, and as we prepare to wrap, I don't want to lose sight of something I mentioned earlier, right? This $2.1 billion that is currently on hold, some of it was earmarked for not just the Red Line, but other projects, including the modernization of our Purple Line. So there are a lot more residents, and things at stake here. But what is next as we wrap up here, Andrea, for folks in your community? Is there an appetite, you think, to put pressure on the president
Absolutely.
To turn this around?
Absolutely. And, you know, just thinking about the circle, the impact that this will have, and one, providing life-changing opportunities that the resources from this infrastructure is going to, it's like a cut and bleeding out. But it's a good bleed because it's going to change the whole environment of what has been a desolate, deprived community. Roseland in itself was once it was a shopping mecca. It
yeah.
was the jewel of the South Side. People would come from all over. We have a very rich history there, and we can't just let it die. So this opportunity helps to bring, it feeds into what's already there that just needs a breath.
Yeah, and I think the hope here is that, as Justin pointed out, that this is in fact just a pause.
Yes.
Yeah. We'll leave it there. Andrea Reed is Executive Director of the Greater Roseland Chamber of Commerce. Karen Weigert is In the Loop's Sustainability Contributor. And Justin Marlowe is a Research Professor in the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ news anchor Claire Lane, WBEZ Race, Class, and Community senior editor Alexandra Solomon, and Chicago Sun-Times national politics reporter Tina Spondalis. A lot of news to get to, but we had to start with the big story here on our streets, the National Guard being deployed in Chicago. Tina kicked things off with what we knew at 9 a.m. on Tuesday.
So Illinois sued yesterday. They were in federal court in the morning. The judge was kind of disappointed to not hear a lot of details from the Trump administration lawyers, like how many guardsmen, where will they be? Where will they be in northern Illinois? Not a lot of answers. She gave them until Wednesday, tomorrow, to answer those questions. And there will actually be oral arguments on Thursday morning. And Governor Pritzker is really, really hoping that there will be a decision by that time.
What would you say were the major takeaways from the press conference yesterday afternoon? This was Governor Pritzker, Illinois Attorney General Kwame Raoul, the mayor, and the Cook County Board President.
I think the governor has kind of been foreshadowing what he thinks President Trump is going to do, which is to call in the Insurrection Act. He has not done that yet, but I think that's his fallback if the courts fail him, if the courts continue to block the troops. And President Trump has been saying that. He's been saying that he's calling this an insurrection. So it's interesting that it seems like Governor Pritzker is one step ahead of this, and he's already preparing for the next step.
Mm-hmm.
I also heard a lot of unconstitutional. I heard a lot of that from Attorney General Kwame Raoul and with Governor Pritzker and with Brandon Johnson. They're setting up the legal arguments here. And like I said, I think Pritzker is looking one step ahead already.
Yeah. Alexandra, Mayor Johnson also issued an executive order yesterday. I think this is his third now. This one declares so-called ice-free zones, and this is in places around town like public parks and public libraries, even private businesses.
Right. So, again, this is, you know, immigration right now is playing out sort of on the streets, in buildings, and then within the legal framework. And so the mayor, these ice-free zones are established to prohibit Immigration and Customs Enforcement from using these city-owned areas like you know, school parking lots, garages, vacant yeah. lots as staging grounds for their operations. So parking their vehicles there, for example. And as part of the executive order, there's going to be signage placed in those areas saying as such. They may use gates to prevent vehicles from entering the areas. And, you know, the idea is really to create a legal avenue to challenge customs and enforcement agents and officers if they trespass. But the order does not, you know, authorize the police to make arrests.
Yeah. So far, the city and the state, they've had very little power to actually stop the federal government from doing what they're doing, right? Arresting people, raiding residential apartment buildings. How does the mayor expect that this, you know, ICE-free zone will actually work in practice?
Again, I think, you know, if they see, they've asked people to report, they've asked their employees to report if agents, you know, pull their vehicles into these areas yeah. and are using these areas as staging grounds, and they have said they will go to court. So again, this will be played out in the courts like so many aspects of the current immigration policy are playing
sure,
out.
Sure, sure. He's also saying he's prepared to take further action if necessary. I want to play a little bit of Mayor Johnson at yesterday's press conference.
And this executive order is a step towards accountability and is calling for the basic rule of law. In the coming days and weeks, we may be pushed, if not forced, to take even more dramatic action if this administration continues to escalate and provoke our people.
Yeah, I seem quite frustrated at that press conference. Anything else you can share that we should know, Alexandra?
You know, just that, again, there are a lot of tensions are high yeah. in the city. Tensions are high with protesters and between agents. Tensions are high in communities. And so there are sort of things that people are able to do legally and things that the law prohibits. And so, you know, again, this is going to probably most likely play out in the courts.
Mm-hmm. Claire, the city's police superintendent, Larry Snelling, said yesterday his officers are kind of in a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation when it comes to trying to do their jobs, keep the peace between Chicagoans and these federal agents.
Right. It's the balancing act between Chicago's welcoming city ordinance and then those enforcing these federal laws, right? So local police is, and Alexandra is mentioning, in a bit of a pickle, tough situation, right, with regard to the federal immigration officials that are here. They can't detain them. They can't arrest them. They can sort of crowd control, do their best to protect people. But all of this is, as she mentioned, going to play out in court. So it was noteworthy of police Superintendent Snelling saying that police did not stand down when federal agents and protesters were gathering over the weekend on the Southwest Side, which became kind of contentious, right? This was in Brighton Park after a woman was shot yeah. and then taken into custody in a bout of chaos, right? There were Border Patrol agents, gas canisters being fired, mm-hmm. pepper balls being fired right. into the crowd. And Snelling is saying Chicago cops got there. They arrived quickly to prevent the scene essentially from yeah. turning into what he was calling a riot, which was really all they can do in this moment. So that's the right. balancing act. That's the damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Yeah. He's saying, I mean, you should know the rules, right? He's like, you know, you may not like what these ICE agents are doing. I can understand there's a lot of emotions out there. This is a quote from him. He says, but that doesn't mean that you get to commit a crime, especially one that could lead to deadly force.
Right. He's warning Chicago residents, you know, don't box in or ram right. any law enforcement vehicles.
Like, I can only protect you so much.
Exactly. You've got to play by the rules to a degree for us to be able
right.
to keep the peace.
Right. There is, you know, using free speech, right? Protesting, shouting, speaking your mind, that's very different than actually impeding a vehicle from driving down the street or driving the wrong way down a street and
yeah.
right, and impeding the law enforcement from carrying out.
Yeah, so much happening here in the city. And good news, we've got Mayor Johnson coming on the program tomorrow morning. So Ask the Mayor will be here, right here at WBEZ's In the Loop tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. where you can call in. Of course, I've got my own questions and I know you've got yours as well. So be sure to tune into In the Loop tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for Ask the Mayor. And if you are just tuning in now, welcome. This is In the Loop. I'm your host, Sasha Ann Simons, and in studio with me is WBEZ's Claire Lane and Alexandra Solomon. We've also got Tinas Vondelis from the Sun-Times on the phone because we are breaking down the biggest stories that you need to know across the Chicago area this morning. Alexandra, back to you, because more details are starting to emerge now about that woman who was boxed in, allegedly, in that federal vehicle on the Southwest Side on Saturday and then was shot by an agent. So what do we know at this point?
Right. So this is an ongoing, evolving case.
She was charged, right?
She was charged. She was in court yesterday, although the judge has released her. Trial is pending. You know, essentially the government says that she was part of a convoy that chased agents and then, you know, drove her vehicle towards them, boxed them in. That is when the Border Patrol agent fired shots. The Sun-Times obtained some video footage that does confirm some of the account that is in the complaint filed in court yesterday that shows, you know, that shows the her vehicle and the vehicle of another man who was also charged as part of this case. The attorney for her name is Marimar Martinez. The attorney, her attorney actually yesterday was in court and said there's also body cam footage from the Border Patrol agent that was involved in the shooting. And the attorney, you know, alleges that the agent shouted, "Do something," before firing shots. And the video also appears to contradict the allegations that Martinez drove towards them before opening fire. That was the video that was in court.
Yeah. But this interesting.
This is evolving. And
yeah, that body cam footage lately has been quite crucial in these instances that we've seen playing out on
right
on our
now
streets.
they don't wear that body cam in every case, so that's been also part of the issue,
right?
Interesting. In some of these cases, so this is, you know, going to play out in court, and we'll have to watch what happens. But there are a lot of discrepancies, as there have been as there was in another incident involving a shooting.
Yeah. Later this hour, Tina, we will be talking with the head of the union representing TSA officers here in Chicago. Because it's day 7 of the federal government shutdown, and I wonder if there's any progress being made.
My sister was stuck on the tarmac for 2 hours last night at O'Hare. I have heard lots of reports of air traffic controllers not coming to work, which is what we saw again in 2019, which is kind of the pressure point that we saw to end the government shutdown. So we are seeing lots of delays at airports. And that impacts so many people. It impacts politicians, normal humans, everyone. So I think that we are kind of seeing that pressure point again. President Trump has said now that he would potentially talk about health care, but that he wants to end the shutdown first. So that's the only tiny little progress that we've heard. But of course, Democrats are not going to really trust that.
Yeah.
So we're going to see what happens with that.
Mm-hmm. And you also wrote another story. This one is about a possible political comeback in Chicago. A family and a name that the city, of course, knows very well. I'm talking about Jesse Jackson Jr. What's going on with him?
Yes. Well, we have a confirmed comeback because he will be announcing a run for the 2nd Congressional District this week.
Okay.
Jesse Jackson Jr. trying again in the same district that he represented for 17 years. It's just going to be a matter of, will voters want him back? Will voters want another political family dynasty? Of course, he's the Reverend Jesse Jackson Jr.'s, senior's son, the brother of Representative Jonathan Jackson. So will we see two members of Congress? That's a possibility.
Yeah. Claire, believe it or not, there are other stories happening in Chicago right now. What else are you keeping your eye on?
Well, all of a sudden, we're quite rich with sports yet again, if that's your cup of tea. Bears are on a bye week, but they return to Monday Night Football next Monday. The Blackhawks opening their regular season tonight. This is against the two-time defending Stanley Cup champions, the Florida Panthers. We'll see how that goes for their new head coach. That's Jeff Blasha, debuting this afternoon. And the Cubs are in trouble. That's just putting it lightly. They fell to the Brewers again last night, 7-3, game two of the series to get into essentially would be the National League Championship. So the Cubs have to win the next two games in order to extend this wild card run that they were so hot with and now has come to sort of a halt. That'll be game three tomorrow at Wrigley.
It's coming back.
So fans in the stands will have to wait and see.
I have faith. I have faith. They're coming back. Alexandra, so much has happened, you know, as we've talked about when it comes to immigration enforcement, just even in the last 72 hours alone. Mm-hmm. I wonder how that enforcement change with the president, with the presence of National Guardsmen, how would that
sort
of fuel the fire, if
well,
you will?
You know, I think what we know right now about a National Guard deployment is going to be based on what we've seen, you know, play out in D.C., Washington, D.C., and in L.A., where the National Guard's been deployed. And in D.C., we've seen troops, right, securing monuments, kind of doing beautification activities. In L.A., there were Marines that were there, or sorry, there were National Guard as well as Marines, you know, assisting immigration and customs enforcement operations, as well as protecting federal agents and property. And they said that they want the Guard to protect federal property. You know, there is a law that bars federal armed forces from participating in civilian law enforcement activities unless they've been expressly authorized to do so by Congress. So there are rules around what the Guard can and can't do.
Lots to watch. We're hearing they can even start coming, you know, as soon as today.
This episode of the In the Loop podcast was produced by me, Linnea Dominic, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. Thanks for listening.